From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, open lines for you. By the way, happy Yom Kippur to those of you of the Jewish faith. Another holiday there for you. Here's what's happening. Well, it's now Hurricane Nicole. Matthew's gone. Nicole has reformed in the Atlantic, and authorities in Bermuda are warning people to prepare for an impact. The U.S. National Hurricane Center in Miami says the storm has maximum sustained winds, and they're expected to strengthen somewhat before its center reaches Bermuda on Thursday morning. Right now, it's about 300 miles away. Governments should tax sugary drinks to fight the global epidemics of obesity and diabetes, according to the World Health Organization. And they recommend that industry swiftly branded, discriminatory, and unproven, that they would chase those companies. A 20% increase would reduce consumption, they say, of sweet drinks by the same proportion. I think it's just a scam to make more money. South Korean tech giant Samsung has permanently ceased production of its high-end Galaxy Note 7 smartphones after reports of devices it had deemed safe catching fire. The firm had already reduced Galaxy Note 7 production volumes. This is a very amazing story, dangerous story. We're bringing in Lauren Weinstein, our expert on high technology. Lauren, thank you for coming on. And let me ask you first and foremost, aren't all smartphones, Motorola, Samsung, Apple, aren't they all made with the same components?
Within certain ranges, in terms of batteries, they certainly are using, all modern smartphones use the same battery technology, which is lithium ion technology. Phones that you, where you can remove the battery, that are designed to be replaceable batteries, will tend to have, in fact, they will always have a hard shell on the battery. The kinds of phones like the Note 7 are the ones that are sealed, and you can't replace the battery. And in those, they'll normally, because they can get more capacity in, they're soft packs. They don't have a hard shell on them, and they're usually soldered in or have a different kind of plug. It's not designed for consumer replacement. This is a really weird situation, and there's no parallel, really, in the smartphone industry. About 2.5 million Note 7s have been sold globally. 1 million have been sold in the U.S. 92 in the U.S. is the number of units that have overheated. They don't explode. A lot of articles will say they're exploding. They don't explode. They overheat. They can catch on fire. They can smoke. And obviously, if that happens when you're driving or you're in an airplane or something, bedroom, and your curtains go up, that's a real problem. But what's really strange here is that Samsung basically went crazy trying to figure out what's going on, and they still don't understand it. They have had a vast number of engineers and technicians working on this. They can't duplicate the problem. They changed the batteries. They started to do a replacement with new Note 7s, and then some of those reportedly were overheating and catching on fire. So now there's starting to be some thinking that maybe it's not the batteries themselves. Exactly. Maybe it's some other component, aspect of the design of the phone that's putting, too much current into the battery or something that's stressing it. So the ones that are a little bit marginal are going up. They've got another problem, too, which is how do you get these phones back from consumers? Because if you're scared that they might catch on fire, a lot of carriers don't want to touch them. So they're now shipping out these, triple layer cardboard boxes with this ceramic fiber material in it that would, presumably try to constrain any fire that actually occurred. Then they found out people were allergic to the ceramic fiber. So they've had to start sending out gloves for people to put their phones in the boxes. It's really important that we understand what's causing this, because this is not necessarily a problem specific to a particular run of batteries or a brand of batteries or a brand of phone. There's something going on here where the system is being stressed. We're constantly trying to get more current and into these batteries faster. We want them to charge faster. We want them to last longer.
Well, but what I think needs to happen, Lauren, though, Samsung engineers need to meet with Apple and Motorola and all these other phones that are out there to find out what they're doing differently from the others, because we're not hearing stories of Apple's catching on fire.
And yet you were correct in what you said at the beginning there in terms of similar components, because often these are all sourced from the same
companies.
Manufacturer.
Yeah.
So what that does tend to suggest that it may not be the batteries, it may be some other part of the charging circuit or the way the current is being managed that's stressing it in a way that it goes up. But we're going to have to understand this.
In terms of PR, this is a disaster for
awful.
Samsung, isn't it?
Awful. I mean, this is on the level of when Excedrin, you remember? What
Tylenol.
Tylenol, right, Excedrin. You know, Tylenol. And the other situations where there weren't that many incidents, but it's devastating to the brand to the brand name. So Samsung has already lost, I think, just I heard 8%. I think that may have just been today or very recently.
Oh, and that'll go up higher.
So they've got a real major effort. But remember, they're the number one smartphone manufacturer in the world.
They were.
there's no one. You know, there's really no one to step up with the kind of volume that would be required. And unless we understand the problem of these batteries, we don't know. The really what's happening here is we really want the batteries. We want conflicting things from these batteries. We want them to last all day or for as many days as possible. We want them to have bright screens and to run all the radios and all the stuff that's inside those phones. And we want them to charge. We don't want them to charge in 8 hours. We want them to charge in 15 minutes. These are all conflicting goals, so it's really not too surprising that we're seeing these kind of stresses and that they're not fully understood yet.
Okay, thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it. What a mess for Samsung. More than 25 previously unpublished Dead Sea Scroll fragments dating back 2,000 years and holding text from the Hebrew Bible have been brought to light, their contents detailed in two new books, the various scroll fragments, records, parts of the books of Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, Samuel, Ruth, so many others. It's just an amazing discovery. Now, some scholars have expressed concerns that some of the fragments are forgeries. The Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered between 1947 and 1956 in a series of 11 caves by the archaeological site of Qumran near the Dead Sea. During that time, archaeologists and local Bedouins unearthed thousands of fragments from nearly 900 manuscripts. President Barack Obama says the United States will work with private companies on its plan to send humans to Mars in 2030s. Robert Zimmerman, our space historian and science advisor, that sounds a little late to me.
this announcement by Barack Obama today is garbage. All right, I'm being diplomatic.
Putting it bluntly, right?
Yeah. Every president since John Kennedy has tried to do this. They have this big speech where they announce we're going to do something by what date, and we're going to bring people somewhere and get them back somewhere and have a great accomplishment. And not one president since Kennedy has even come close to having it happen, usually because if NASA can't do it for the cost or in the time, and then another president comes along and makes their speech and changes everything. This is all hogwash, and it's not to be taken very seriously. What is important about this, George, is that the reason presidents recently have been doing this repeatedly, both Bushes did it, Clinton did a variation, and now Obama's done it twice in his administration, by the way. First it was the asteroids, now it's going to Mars. Is because they have sensed that the public wants it. And what's good about that is that it means that private companies got a lot of customers to sell a product to, and that's what will get us to Mars, because we're going to have private enterprise selling product to people who want to do it. And that's what this is indicating to us. What Obama's suggesting ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen, not the way he suggested.
Robert's website, behindtheblack.com. Robert, thank you so much. In a moment, we're going to talk about grief dreams. It's an amazing story. Joshua Black joins us. He's going to tell us about his life. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Joshua Black's research interest is in the area of grief dreams, with a special focus on dreams of the deceased. Now, he first investigated this area while in his Master's of Arts program at Trent University. Now, his thesis examined themes and personal meaning on dreams of the deceased. Joshua is currently in a PhD program, psychology, at Brock University. He's continuing to investigate grief dreams. It's an amazing subject. Joshua, thanks for coming on the program. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on, George.
Give us the definition of grief dreams.
I guess the best way to talk about grief dreams are any kind of dreams that occur after the death of someone. It could be a human or an animal, and some people have called these bereavement dreams or dreams after loss. Visitation dreams is a very common name for these. And so the grief dreams is sort of like an umbrella term, and what I see is there's three sort of different types of grief dreams. There's the dreams that don't have the deceased present or mention them, but it refers to the loss and the emotions that occur after it. So maybe someone's walking by a mountain and the mountain collapses on them. It sort of represents the heartache that's going on in waking life. But then there's those dreams that the deceased aren't present, but people are mentioning them. So it could be an angel coming to reassure them that they crossed over, or just friends. Then the last dream is what everyone sort of seems to want to talk about, is those dreams that have the deceased present in human form. Or in another form, I've seen dreams where the deceased was in the form of a cloud, and they spoke to the dreamer. So those are that sort of gives you an idea of what grief dreams are.
Generally, who's having the dream? Relatives, close friends, just about anybody who had an association with the person who passed on?
Yeah, it's basically what it is. Most people that I hear about, they actually really cared about the person that passed on. So it's anyone, really, like friends. Even celebrities, right? Like you really had an attachment to a celebrity, or you really loved a celebrity, and they had meaning in your life, have a dream of them.
So a lot of people got depressed when Elvis died, for example. I bet they had a lot of dreams.
A lot of people would have dreamt of Elvis after, or even like prophets, right? Or like religious figures, people dream about them, and I would say that would be also a grief dream because the person's dead, right?
So, are your studies, Joshua, more towards the person who's dreaming, or to that deceased person who's in that dream?
It's more of the person who's dreaming, more their reactions to it, what their thoughts are. Are there any complications that occur, or are all these dreams positive? So that's more of the perspective on it, because it's with those people that they have the questions, they want answers, and it's more with them.
Joshua, about 8 years ago, something very sad and tragic happened to you. Why don't you tell us what that is?
I was never really cared about this type of work. I was actually at Brock University, my undergrad, and I was in the sleep lab looking at napping, because that's what I loved to do at that time. So I said, hey, why not study that? But it was when I was studying that my father passed away very suddenly, and it was the first time I actually had someone that I loved die.
Yeah.
And I never really knew what grief was until it happened. I always thought it was maybe like a bad breakup, but it's not like that at all. So it really crushed me, and like I felt really numb. And I had a hard time processing it because there's no one really around that was giving me any kind of tools or that safe space. So because I think my dad passed away so suddenly, it really took a toll on me. But it was 3 months later, I had a dream of my father, and it totally shook me to the core, and it reversed or changed the way I was processing my loss. And so I'll tell you the dream. So I was in my room, and the dream and the imagery was different than any other dream I've had. It was like very vivid. It was more real than real. It's hard to explain, but it was just so real. And so I stand up on my bed, and I see my father at the end of the room. And he's looking through my stuff, and everything in my room is the exact same as it was in waking life.
Yeah.
And that's really weird, because usually dreams are very like bizarre, and there's like elephants flying in your room and stuff. But this was very realistic. And so I walked up to him, he turned around, he looked healthy, and I told him that I loved him and I'm going to miss him, acknowledging the loss. So I knew he was dead in the dream, right?
Yeah.
And then we hugged, and I woke up. And looking back on that event, I believe because my dad passed suddenly, I never got a chance to say goodbye. That gave me it released that block in me to actually start processing my grief.
He was supposed to pick you up before and take you to a hockey game, right?
Yeah, he was. That's why, like, when he didn't show up, I never thought he would be dead. I just thought he maybe forgot, he slept in, something like that. But when I got the call 2 days later that he was dead, he was found dead, how do you process that, right? Because it's not something you expect, right? And I think a lot of loss that people they're listening to never really expected it to happen. You know,
you got a call 2 days later? Why not right away? What happened?
Well, he was, no one knew he was dead. He was just, you know, on the floor in his bathroom where he lived.
All by himself?
All by himself.
Oh.
Yeah, so it took 2 days basically for people to realize that something was wrong.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, that's a double whammy all by itself, isn't it?
Yeah, it really shook up the family, for sure, especially those people that found the body, his sister and his brother. So, I'm glad that I wasn't part of that. I didn't see him, you know, like on the floor. That would have been a very disturbing image for me to.
Oh my God! Process, yes.
Right. Yeah. So like at the end of the day, like I'm just happy that I had the dream and it was a positive dream, and that's not always the case. I've had, you know, I think it's been gone 6 years now, or 8 years actually. Sorry, 8 years now. I've had, you know, probably six. Very vivid positive dreams of my father, and had one negative dream. The rest have more or less been, he's been in the background.
What creates the dream, Joshua? And the reason for that is my dad died back in 2011. He was 88 years old. I miss him. It was sad, but he had a great run. I mean, my God, if I could get 88 years, I'd be happy.
Right.
The one that really was difficult for me and the family was the loss of my sister at about the age of 56 of a brain tumor.
Wow.
That we didn't expect and just went through, holy heck, going through that situation. But I have not had a grief dream, and I don't know why.
Hmm. Have you had a dream of your father, or you just haven't had
No, I haven't had a dream of my dad, and I haven't had a dream of my sister. They haven't visited me, or for some reason, I just haven't had that kind of dream yet. And I don't know, have I blocked something out, or, you know, I'd be a case for your PhD thesis.
Yeah, you're welcome to be a participant for sure. The first thing I ask when people say that, because it's a very common concern, right? Like, why haven't I dreamt of this person? I first ask, do you normally dream?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do dream. Most of my dreams are power dreams or intuitive dreams, precognitive dreams.
Okay.
They're like dreams that are working for me constantly.
Wow.
But okay. In this particular case, it's not there. And you know, we do a lot of shows on ghosts and visitations and things, and I haven't had that happen yet either. I mean, I haven't had the, hey, Dad's here, or my sister Glinda's with us. I haven't had that.
Okay. Has anyone in your family had it?
Nobody's brought it up.
Have you asked or no?
No, I haven't asked. But
yeah, this is the interesting thing. Like, you might have had other people in the family that had a dream, but they just haven't shared it with you. And this is like one of the biggest things I'm learning as I'm in this field, is that many people hold on to their dreams.
Sure.
They don't tell their family members because they don't want the family members to get jealous.
Right. But I mean, even if they did have one, that doesn't explain why I haven't.
No, that's right. That's very true. And that's one of those things my PhD will be looking at, is what factors predict dreaming of the deceased. And so you'd think right off the bat it'd be your dream recall frequency. Like, how often do you remember dreaming? Because you'd think you'd probably dream. My theory is that you're probably dreaming of the deceased. You're just not remembering it when you wake up. And so there's a process in sort of dream recall that, you know, like, you're dreaming probably, like, you know, if you're sleeping 8 hours, you're dreaming in REM and non-REM. So probably like 5 hours of that is dreams. And so why are you only remembering one or two dreams that are, you know, split, you know, maybe 10 seconds, 20 seconds? Why is your mind picking up that one to remember and not others? I don't know. And that's one of the big mysteries that I hope, as, you know, continue going forward in this research, to actually provide some answers for people, because a lot of people can get concerned with not having these dreams. Going into this, I never would have thought that there would be these concerns, because I just had like this positive dream and I was like, wow, this is pretty amazing, right? But there's people that don't have these dreams, and some of the concerns that people have brought up is that they wonder if they even crossed over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those that believe that there's a visitation, they wonder if they crossed over, if they made it to heaven, or are they stuck in hell, right, with, this, with the Christian dichotomy of heaven and hell. Other people, they think that maybe they did cross over, but they're mad at them because, you know, the way they had to sell the house or something, had to give away something. Other people think that, you know, they didn't come to him because they didn't love him anymore.
It's like, hold on, Josh. We're going to take a break, but we'll come back. Joshua Black with us as we talk about grief dreams. And next hour, of course, he'll be with us, and we'll take your calls. And welcome back to Coast, Joshua Black with us as we're talking about grief dreams. Joshua, what was the reaction to your instructors and professors when you wanted to do grief dreams for your dissertation, for your PhD?
Well, it was... They've never really like had a student ask about that, you know. Especially for my
never ever.
You know, like it doesn't. I think it's not something that comes up a lot. And I think the reason, like, if you look at the research that's out there, it's very little. Like, it's very sparse. So, for me to in my master's to meet with my supervisor and say, hey, this is what I'm wanting to do. She kind of like, you know, did a double take, but she found and believes she might have had her own grief dreams. And found that maybe this is something that's useful for society to actually know more about. And once I started to do that, then it just sort of the ball started rolling and people started to see, I think, what could be done in this field because there's really nothing, as I stated.
All right, let's talk about one of your studies, Women's Dream Journal. Tell me about that.
Okay, that was Trent University. I looked at Women's Dream Journal. And so it was 2.5 years a dream journal after she lost her husband from her father from cancer. And so what I wanted to look at with that is, do dreams change over time, right? Because that'd be interesting to look at. And, you know, are there common themes that occur? And sort of when do these occur? Because I said, like, I was getting questions already before I even started of, you know, how come I don't dream about the deceased? So those are some of the questions I looked at. And so what I found... was when it comes to the themes, that the themes did change over time. So at first, there was almost like this alive again type dream where they're like, the deceased is mentioning, you know, that they're back to life. And then, like, after that, there's 6 dreams that were of comfort. So the father would come to the door and, you know, say that he loved them or loved her. And the last dream was more of like a daily activity dream. So it wasn't the main focus, the deceased wasn't the main focus of the dream anymore. It was actually on this bird. And so really showcases how I think when healing occurs, that these dreams are changing to different forms. I think that's a pretty fascinating thing. And then, so when we look at when do these dreams occur, they actually occurred at specific times that relate to the memory of the deceased loved one in a meaningful way. So it would be like his birthday, Christmas, when they used to meet, the anniversary of the death. So what it suggests is that maybe you need that first year anniversary mm-hmm. to have that dream of the deceased.
Have you ever heard of somebody waking up crying from their dream?
Yes, a lot of times. Sometimes they're happy tears. Other times they're sad tears.
They're sad. Yeah.
They realize it's just a dream.
Now, you also have collected a lot of dream reports. Tell me about how you went about finally getting people to admit, hey, I was having a dream like this.
Right. It was a challenge actually to collect reports because I had to do the ethics. I had to go through bereavement organizations, and so they had to post it within their organization, and then people would contact me. And so different themes that I found. So at the end of the day, there was about 77 dreams, and there were common themes that were popping up, which is fascinating, right? So like, these common themes, there must be a reason for them. And so we can talk about what those are later on.
Sure.
And then also found, I asked sort of, what was your most memorable dream? And also, why was it memorable to you? And so I found that 77% of the reported dreams were memorable because it helped them in their grief process. It's huge.
Are the dreams different, Joshua, based on how the individual died?
Oh, I've seen, so like for, let's say, suicide loss.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, some of these dreams, like a common theme is that the individual will say sorry or will comment that they're not in any pain anymore. This is interesting, right? And so it could reflect some of the waking concerns that the individual has. because when I did a talk at a suicide support loss group, and they're saying one of the main things that they have a hard time dealing with is understanding the why. And so sometimes they get the deceased will actually answer them in the dream and give them a why and why they did it, which is, I think, very fascinating, because that releases a lot of, like, it eliminates that question in your grief, right?
What about other tragedies, like a car accident, or in your case, for example, when your dad just died of a heart attack? Those are pretty tragic.
They are. I think, the different types of loss, especially for me, to able to say goodbye, you don't really see that. Like, it's a theme, but you don't see it all the time. So I'm guessing, like, when you say goodbye, like, in a dream, you probably didn't get a chance to say goodbye in waking life, right? Other ones, like, traumatic stuff, like, if you witness, like, the death, like, they maybe say they got hit by a car or something.
And you were there, you saw.
You were there, you might actually reimagine that in your dream. So you might just have dreams of them dying again, which is very sad, and I would never wish that on anyone, because it's so painful to just read these dreams. It's so sad that, like, this person's having a recurring dream of this night after night, and you're just like, wow.
Joshua Black with us. His website, griefdreams.ca. Now, if someone has a grief dream, are they better or worse later on when they wake up?
For the majority of the time, I would say if it's a comfort dream, right? So it's beautiful. They're saying they love them. They wake up and they actually feel better.
Yeah. You know,
something's changed. But if it's one of those negative dreams, let's say like the getting run over by a car, or seeing them dead the entire dream, they're going to wake up.
That's not
very
good.
Distraught, and it's going to ruin their day, and it actually will linger in their mind, you know, for weeks on end. Yeah, some of these people, what their most memorable dream is, and 40 years later, it's like one of these negative dreams because they can't get it out of their head, right? It's the last image that they have of the deceased. You know, if you really think about it, like, your last image isn't seeing the body anymore or the casket. Now it's the dream image, right?
How do we know if the dream isn't some kind of spiritual visitation from the afterlife as opposed to the person dreaming creating this in their own dream?
That's the mystery, right? And I think a lot of people want an answer to that. And, you know, a lot of people will say, I know a visitation dream because it's vivid, or, you know, they say it's real. But I've come to learn through trial and error that you can't really determine, like, what these dreams are to people. Like, they have to know. It's almost a feeling, right? Like, the dreamer has a feeling when they wake up. And you go with that. I've seen people, like, where the deceased is just, like, in a distance, and they woke up and they said, you know, they said to me, like, I had this visitation dream, and this is what it was. Like, we weren't even interacting. They wouldn't call even vivid, but they felt it was a visitation dream. Even negative dreams, some people would say it's a visitation dream that they're haunting them. And so I've learned, so you just really have to ask the dreamer. It'd be easy if we could actually talk to the spirit and say, hey, you know, like, was that you in the dream? But I haven't figured out a way to contact spirit yet.
So are you still writing the dissertation, or is it done?
No, it's still writing. So I'm in my third year. And so I just collected data looking at what factors predict dreaming of the deceased, right? Because that's huge. That's like the main question people want to know. And I also have been looking at pet loss and dreams there. So I'm looking at common themes and also what factors predict dreaming of the deceased. So I should have probably results within the next month or two to be able to share.
Well, that's exciting stuff. It really
is. I'm so pumped. Usually, like, you sometimes go in this, like, it's a long program, right? Like, it's 4 years, maybe 2 years in MA, but, like, I'm at a point now, I'm so excited about the research, because it's just, like, something that I want out there. And I know a lot of people are wanting to hear, you know, like, what the findings are to calm their own mind. Like, my whole big thing is to give people a scientific explanation on why maybe they're not dreaming of the deceased. I think that's a big thing. Because I said, like, before the commercial break, some people put a lot of negativity on themselves and why they're not getting these dreams.
Well, and that includes me.
Wow.
You know, so I may want to be part of your study. We'll make sure you get a hold of our people and you and I can chat.
All right, yeah. That sounds like a big plan. And who knows, maybe after tonight's show, you may have a dream.
You never know.
Yeah, I've heard that before. People come to my talk, and then they have a dream the next day.
Will your dissertation have a conclusion? Not by what I mean an ending, but I mean, will you come up with a concluded something about grief dreams, some kind of statement?
I hope so. You know, like, it won't be like, you know, like it's, at the end of the day, you still need to replicate the studies and to do more research, but I should have something that I can take out to the world to say, hey, this is what's going on.
Are you finding any common denominator here with these dreams?
The themes are, it's very interesting. The themes are very similar. I don't know when we have time to talk about those, but maybe after the break.
We've got all kinds of time.
We got lots of time. All right.
Lots of time. And by the way, you're in Canada, right? So I hope you had a good Thanksgiving on Monday.
I did. Thanks. Yeah, it was nice having the family over. And you don't get to see them all the time, right? So it's nice to sort of
Put them all together.
Yeah, you know, especially when there's nieces and nephews now in the picture.
yep.
Yeah, yes. But yeah, so like the big thing when it comes to people talking about visitation dreams, they really say it's vivid, right? That's one of the main things. And they're usually alone, right? It's usually like one-on-one interaction. Other than that, like it's just it's more about these themes that are popping up and what these themes mean. Because when it comes to the research, they have looked at different themes, but the problem was they were never they didn't look at the reliability of it. So when someone else tried to score those same dreams, they wouldn't be able to get that same result. So I think the first step in this field, because it's so new, is to get these themes coded and reliably scored. And then from there, you can see how it relates to grief, how it relates to maybe attachment, other things, to realize, okay, why do these certain themes come in? Even like time, right? Like when do those alive again dreams come in? Is it just in the beginning, right? Or is it somewhere else? So it'd be interesting to see how that, how they correlate with other things.
Joshua, do you have to be particularly religious or spiritual in order to have one of these grief dreams?
A lot of people think so, but honestly, like, just I was just like looking over the data today. Spirituality had nothing to do with if people had these dreams or not. They probably will determine how you view the dream. So if you view it as a visitation or not, probably if you're spiritual, you're more likely to see it as a visitation. But the dream itself, having the dream itself, no, that's not a factor that predicts it, which is very interesting.
When people dream, and we've had all kinds of dreams on this program, lucid dreaming, you know, as I mentioned, precognitive. What about the dreams where the deceased visits someone before that person knew they were dead? What is that?
Oh, that's a mystery. I wish I knew. It's funny because
it does happen.
It does. Oh, I know. Like people have emailed me many of times. And even when I was doing my research, I'm like, I can't accept that because you didn't know they were dead, right? So it's not really a grief dream, right? Because
that's right. You're not grieving because you don't think they're dead.
That's right. So yeah, it's a fascinating thing that like I hear all the time. But I think I have a dream actually, or showcase that for you if you want to hear.
Sure, go ahead.
Time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember, we have all the time in the world.
Okay, I don't know how it works over there. Okay, so here's the dream. I went down into the basement to take a shower. As I was walking towards the shower, I turned around, and my daughter, deceased, and her boyfriend were standing there by the basement door. I asked her, "What are you doing here?" She said, "Tom, her boyfriend, came in to say goodbye." I said, "Goodbye? Where are you going?" My daughter said, "He has to go to school like me." I replied, "Aren't you done school yet?" "No, Mom. It's just like it is here. You go to school and learn something, then you move on to another school and learn more." I said, "Okay." Tom gave me a hug and said goodbye, and they left. And so the daughter was already deceased, but the boyfriend wasn't. Months later, the boyfriend died.
He died too?
But he was saying goodbye 2 months prior. Fascinating.
In her dream. See, I believe that people are connected wirelessly, of course, but we're all connected to each other, to the universe. I mean, everything's connected.
Yeah.
And I have used Joshua in my dream state. I have concentrated on things that I wanted to accomplish, goals I wanted to complete, and they would happen because of, I think, my dream state. I would just think about it before I would go to bed, and then I'd just let it go to work for me. And if that included, you know, gosh, I really, you know, need this project done, and I sure wish this guy would call me so we could do this. I'd concentrate on that guy and then go to sleep. And a day or two later, guess who would call? That guy, right?
Yeah, wow.
And it would work out like that. So that, I just think this is all connected with what you're talking about, grief dreams and everything else.
Yeah.
There's something there that makes this all click.
Yeah, the dream world's very mysterious. And I think that's why we love talking about it. And, you know, we don't have scientific tools to really understand what's going on, I think, just yet. But yeah, there's a lot of mystery that surrounds it, and you said a lot of in a lot of religions they have these dreams that, you know, either precognitive to tell them like what to do, or even, you know, angels and stuff. So at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of things that can occur. I know, like, people like who is it, Jack Nicholson, the golfer, he used a dream.
Jack Nicholas.
Nicholas. Oh, okay, Nicholas.
Nicholson's the actor.
I'm a basketball player.
You can't handle the truth.
So anyways, he had a dream of, he was doing really bad golfing the one day, and then he had a dream, and he was in the dream, he was golfing, he was doing really well. And then when he looked at the way he was holding his club, it was different than what he was holding in waking life. And when he woke up, he switched the grip, and he was doing better.
I love that. Right? That's a great story. You've got a Dreams Facebook group, right? Grief Dreams Facebook group.
And I do, yeah.
Tell me about the podcast.
Okay. Let's talk about the Facebook group. So
sure.
The reason for that is because there's no place on the internet people can go to talk about these dreams. And since a lot of people feel isolated because they don't want people to change their meaning, I thought it'd be good to have a place where people can share in a safe environment
dreams
that they've had, right? Or questions they have, and I can answer them, or anyone else can. So that's the main reason for the group. It's actually doing well. It's actually surprising, and it's I always get a warm heart when I see more people join, because it's just like, wow, like, this is actually a space where more people are finding out and are enjoying. And you're like, it's just amazing. And so after that, so I had that, and then I decided to do a podcast because more people want to know stories and information. And so we developed this, me and my co-host Sean Ram, we developed this Grief Dreams podcast. And at first, it was like, we didn't really know what we were doing at first, but now we have an understanding of, like, the show and what I think is best. And so we take people from all different areas, organizations. Some people are authors, researchers, you know, businessmen. But they all have a story, which is fascinating. So we bring them on. They talk about their journey. They talk about any kind of loss they've had, and then whatever dreams they've had or dreams that they want to have.
Or not having dreams.
Yeah, and so, like, those people are on there asking the questions. And so I think a lot of people can get a in-depth understanding of these dreams based on listening to those podcasts and realize that everyone, you know, from any sort of rich, poor, you know, different kind of job, occupations, are all having these dreams and have these concerns, and they have loss. And it's basically to raise awareness on, you know, grief itself and what people have to deal with as they move forward in life.
Okay, for them to find you on Facebook then, how do they do that?
The easiest way is to just go to the griefdreams.ca website, and then all the links are on
there. All the links are there for you, including your podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, sure. And we've got the link of the website at coasttocoastam.com for everybody.
That's beautiful.
As well. It's an amazing subject. And when do you think you'll finish the PhD?
So probably another 2 years I'll be done.
So you'll be a doctor of what?
A doctor of psychology.
Okay. Specializing in grief dreams.
Yeah, yeah. So
I mean, are you going to teach, or are you going to set up a shop? Are you going to put up a shingle and talk to people who have grief dreams?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think that's, you know, like, at the end of the day, I'm just doing this because that's where my heart is. And we'll see where it goes. I don't really want to teach at the university. You know, I've done that already.
Yeah, okay.
And that's not for me. But I want to work more with people in doing talks and working and helping people explore these dreams. It's fascinating how, like clinicians who, like, are trained in this area don't get taught about these dreams.
Well, why don't you come on our show every once in a while and talk to people who have had these issues, too? You want to do that?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. Josh, we're going to come back in a minute. We've got a full hour to go of phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about grief dreams.